the most original talk radio station anywhere. We are LA Talk Radio at latalkradio.com.
Likes and friends, he says what he wants, ain't holding nothing back. Got the recipe for life, and he's inspiring. He's not scared of any topic, from sextile to gossip.
Everyone, this is Tamara Montana, and Greg is with us here tonight. Max is over in Europe doing his cooking show. So welcome to LA Talk Radio again. We appreciate you tuning in with us and just having wonderful memories of being on the radio with Max for 2 years, and it was absolutely wonderful. And to be able to fill in for him is an honor and a privilege, and I'm very, very grateful. So thank you. Thank you. And thank you, Ronan, for holding everything down at the studio. You guys are in for a real treat tonight. My husband, Greg Montana, he is absolutely dedicated, committed to people getting in touch with themselves from the inside out, by identifying what their heart virtue is. And, you know, it's very interesting because Greg and I were just watching a movie today, which is a remake of What's Supposed to Happen in December 21st, 2012. And there's all these predictions, as I'm sure you're aware of, that, you know, the Mayans and the calendars and everything's supposed to end, the end of the world. And I know Greg's been asked about that from time to time whenever he speaks before stages and talks with people about what's most meaningful to them. And, you know, one of the things that really struck us today was, my gosh, we've got today. How do we want to live today? Who do we want to be? And how do we want it at the end of our lives? You know, at the end of our lives, what's really, really going to matter? How we lived, did we love with all of our heart? Were there anyone, any people that you could have forgiven that you didn't forgive, that that wanted to connect with you that you didn't connect with? There's all these kinds of questions that come up, I think, when we're faced with a movie like that that is so moving. In fact, Greg may remember the title of it. I was kind of in and out in the beginning, but we'll go ahead and invite him here to Max and Friends. Greg, can you just pull your mic up?
Oh, hi. Can you guys hear me?
Hey, yes, we can hear you.
Good to be here.
Wow, so good to have you on the show. So, Greg, I was just mentioning, as you were listening in a little bit on the movie we were watching today, and getting in touch with what's most meaningful to people. I know that that's at the core of your work and what you offer to people. Can you tell us a little bit more about Heart Virtue?
Well, the movie was 2012, and, you know, it's one of these apocalyptic, almost like a conspiracy theory movie. And the thing that I noted about it was it really, you know, I turned to Tamara at one point and I said, you know, wow, this really makes you think about what's important to you. And so you mentioned Heart Virtues. What Heart Virtues is about is it's kind of an interesting formula that I discovered that every human being, when there's an argument, when they are troubled, frustrated, angry, even depressed, the reason at the very core is always one simple single reason, and it is that their virtue has been violated. And, you know, different people have different virtues. Mother Teresa was committed to compassion. You may be married to someone that's committed to loyalty, and they're constantly, you know, they may be jealous or, you know, or very watchful. You may be married to someone that's committed to freedom, and they want to be, you know, they don't want to be restricted or let down. You may be committed to somebody that's committed to responsibility and reliability or trust or honesty and communication. So what Heart Virtues is about is that I actually identifying these specific virtues. And the funny thing is we're trained not to know what they are.
Mm. That's right. That's right. So being that it's hidden in a blind spot, how do people even go about identifying what theirs is?
Well, you see these virtues show up in the extreme experiences we have in life. You know, and these are the experiences that most trouble people and most enliven them. For instance, have you ever sat in a theater and literally seen a movie that's like gives you goosebumps? There's one scene that may give you goosebumps, but the person sitting next to you in the theater may not get goosebumps in that scene. It may be 5 minutes later and they're moved to tears, or they have that wave of love that goes through their body and they go like, wow, that's such a beautiful scene. And you'll notice that different scenes touch different people in different ways. You'll also notice that people get really angry at different things. You know, some people are really, you know, it's absolutely incensed if somebody cuts them off on the road. Other people don't mind so much, but they, you know, if someone lies to them, they're completely incensed. So, or tries to restrict them in some way. So you notice that the extremes are where we actually find the data for identifying someone's heart virtue. What gives you those goosebumps? Those unbelievable moments. And what we've discovered is the same thing, the same core virtue, whether it be honesty or compassion or kindness, that gives you those goosebumps when you're watching those scenes in movies, is the exact same virtue that when you're enraged, when you're frustrated, when you're completely out of control, like literally people say, you know, I saw red and I don't know what happened to me. I don't remember what happened next. That's because the virtue is actually greater than us. It'll take us over. And if we don't learn to stand for it, we'll end up fighting for it.
You know, even as you're speaking right now, I'm recalling when I've recently been so enraged at undercurrents, you know, gossip or people that are undermining somebody who's really wanting to do good on the planet. What would you say that's about?
Well, you'd have to give me a very specific instance. Like if you think of a moment that made you completely enraged, just can you name a specific instance that happened recently?
Mm-hmm. Definitely.
What would it be?
It's amazing. It's an act where someone would say something to your face and do something. It's kind of hard, you know, because I know that radio is so public, but I do want to be personal and I want to be direct.
For example,
I'm just going to say an example that you had. So when you go out on a job, you're going to do a delivery and you're there to be of help and service, but someone is like against you. You're ringing the doorbell. And then finally, when they let you in, you know, instead of, they just don't come right out and say, you know, I hate you, I don't want you here, you piss me off. They say, oh, I thought you were just checking the doorbell. You know, that kind of stuff, like, enrages me. Like, it's not even the truth, and it's hurtful.
Now, here's the question. In that moment, what were you committed to that was being violated?
Camaraderie. Teamwork.
Camaraderie. And it sounds like there's also authentic communication or respect or something like that.
Right. Oh, my gosh. You know what? Because I know what we're up to. I know that both of us are so committed to, you know, having environments that work where people actually have your back and they support you. They catch you doing things right. And when someone's undermining and kind of doing things very sneaky it's like what you were talking about, a conspiracy, even in the movie we were watching earlier today. I mean, what is being so violated is, my God, just the love and the dream of making something successful where people, it's palatable. They feel it when they walk into the environment. Because I know, Greg, you talk about people feel your heart. When you're generating from your heart, they feel you 30 feet away. And when you're just in your head trying to figure things out, it's like, what is it, like 2 inches in front of your head that you have this fear?
What you're actually referring to is that we actually have two nervous systems, and we've been trained to think that we only have one. We have our brain and our spine. And we were told that nervous system is what controls everything in our body. And that's not true, because I can take your heart out of your body, and if you put it on an operating room tray, it'll beat just by itself. So we know that more than 50% of the tissue of the heart is actually neural tissue. It's mitochondria. It's a special kind of tissue that actually thinks. Now, if I were to ask everyone that's listening right now to point to yourself, just do that physically, point to yourself, 99% of you are going to point right to your chest, to your heart. And here's what's really funny. We are trained to think that our personality and who we are is something that's stored in our brain, like our identity is up there. But the fact is it's not. It's actually stored down in our torso. And we know that who we are, who we identify with, is what's living in our chest. So, you know, we have these two nervous systems. We have our brain, and our brain does put pieces together and figure out, you know, kind of like, okay, here's who I think I am because this is my identity and the things I've done. But we also have this part of us that is in our heart, and that's why we call it a heart virtue. Is because the part of you that is actually you.
Well, you know what's amazing is even as you're talking, when I feel the rage, it's not in my head. I mean, it's in my heart. I mean, my whole body has a visceral response. I mean, it's a feeling that is just almost like hard to tolerate. Same thing with goosebumps.
And that feeling is basically what we would call your soul. Now, if people don't stand for what they believe in, then the soul does this crazy thing where it'll take over when it's time to show up. It'll take over and have some very rude habits, yelling, screaming, throwing tantrums, getting angry. Or that's if you happen to be an exploder. You know, if you happen to be an imploder, and people tend to be of one type or the other. They either explode or implode. Imploders tend to get depressed. You know, the clinical definition of depression is anger turned inward. But the point is that who we are.
Yeah, so what do we do? When those things are being violated, how would you suggest that we go about if it's really the language of our soul? Like how would you have me? Like, that's a situation that was presented to me just this week. What would be in alignment with my soul in the way that I address that?
So you were talking about how, you know, someone, you're ringing a doorbell and you're being ignored, and someone says, well, I just thought, you know, you were testing the doorbell. And so what you're probably committed to is something like respect, something like, you know, honest communication, acknowledgement, you know, whatever that
is. I mean, I got that. But how is it?
Okay, what is it? What was it for you in that moment?
Just pick a single word.
So I have an example.
Teamwork.
Great. So the first thing you do when you notice that you start getting enraged and angry is you say, excuse me, I am committed to teamwork. If you notice that, in, you know, that somebody's, you know, cutting you off in traffic, excuse me, I'm committed to respect. And it's amazing how we as human beings know from following the heroes and the most successful people in our world that what they did was focus on what they want. Now, the way human beings are trained is you put something in my way and I will focus on the obstacle automatically. I'll go after what I want. You know, I'm gonna get my promotion or I'm gonna get my you know, my raise or whatever it happens to be. And if there's some obstacle that somebody puts in the way, I will automatically attack the person and take my mind off my goal. So the way
I stand, I am committed to teamwork. Now what?
So you say, I'm committed to teamwork. When I was ringing the bell and you didn't answer, I did not experience teamwork. What are you committed to? And find out what they're committed to, because they may not be committed to teamwork. They may be committed to independence. Well, notice this now. Now we have two completely, neither is wrong. One person's committed to teamwork or togetherness, another person's committed to independence and autonomy. And if those two people at their core have those two virtues, and you put the two of them and say, you guys got to work together, the person's committed to teamwork is constantly going to be making wrong that the person's committed to independence. And the person's committed to independence is going to play passive-aggressive games because they know that maybe they're supposed to be on a team, but that's not authentically what they're committed to. So what we do is we basically say, listen, I understand I want to acknowledge that you're committed to independence. So when I was ringing the bell, now notice, there's no make-wrong here. You say, wow, you're committed to independence. That's why you didn't answer the bell. I'm committed to seeing that you get to experience independence while I'm experiencing teamwork. My request of you is the next time I ring the bell, you answer the bell. You don't have to work with me side by side. But my request of you is that in those moments when I need you, that you show up and then go on and do what you're doing. So again, it's to instead of like there's one virtue for everybody, what would it be? So, I mean, come on, they're all constantly working apart.
So is there ever a time where two virtues can not actually work together? Do you believe that we all can work together? It's just a matter of choice?
Well, the virtue itself is defining what work together means. So notice that you said you were committed. Well, here's what's funny. You're saying, is there ever a time when the virtues work together? So can you hear that you're committed to teamwork? You're committed to togetherness. If there's a listener on the line right now and they're committed to independence, they're going, what's wrong with her? Doesn't she get it? They're not supposed to work together. They're supposed to work independently. So notice how these virtues literally color everything. You know, we do not see the world the way it is. We see the world the way we are.
We see the world the way we are.
Yes. What we're most committed to is what we project onto everything and then judge it for its ability to fulfill us. So if I'm committed
What are you committed to? What are you committed to?
Well, I'm committed to spiritual integrity, which means that people stand for what's most meaningful to them, that they live in alignment with what's most meaningful to them. I am not a fan of competition at all. I'm a big fan of seeing that people stand for what they believe in, that they go for their goals, that they go 100% for them, and that they become masters of being themselves. And, you know, I became a monk for 8 years to get in alignment with what was most meaningful to me, to have an antiseptic sort of environment where I could really introspect and get clear that I am committed to integrity, that people be integrated. But I don't pretend that that's for everybody. That's not, you know, everybody doesn't have to be integrated. That's just what I'm committed to. And if that appeals to you, I'm a great person for you to work with. But if you're if you're somebody that's committed to, you know, conquest and competition, and you want to learn to, you know, to conquer your you know, the other people that are trying to master the same craft you are, I'm probably not the best person to work with. If you want to master yourself, then if you want to really be in touch with yourself, understand yourself like never before, that's what I love. It's when people know themselves, they speak their truth, and they give their gift, they leave their legacy. And those are the three steps that I'm always telling people. If you want to know yourself, speak your truth, and give your gift, I got a great program for you.
Where can they go? If there's somebody listening here tonight because, you know, something resonates with them, you know, they're able to identify that, oh my gosh, I've felt rage, I've felt goosebumps, but I've never actually been able to identify what I'm committed to. Where can they go to discover what their heart virtue is?
Well, they have a number of choices, and the choices would depend on their virtue. If you like to work alone, then you can go right now to heartvirtue.com. That's heart like in your chest, virtue, VIRTUE.com. You can actually take an assessment right there. It's a little test you take. It asks you about those amazing moments of goosebumps and moments when you were enraged. It helps you get in touch with what you were committed to, because we are not enraged unless we're committed to something. Every time a human being's enraged, they're committed to something beautiful that's being blocked or violated. And that's your heart virtue. So knowing what it is, you can find out online at heartvirtue.com. You can contact me personally. My phone number is on that website, and I do private sessions one-on-one. Or if you like working in groups, we occasionally have classes where we work in groups with people. And those are basically the three ways. In a group, one-on-one, private coaching, or all alone, you can do it online assessment anytime you want.
How did you happen to stumble on, or not even stumble on, but what was your soul yearning for that had heart virtues be revealed to you?
Well, what happened for me was I went to a very competitive college. I graduated school, and I got a job working with this company, Intel. And Intel is a, you know, I had a great career, but I couldn't stand the bureaucracy and the corporate culture was all about, you know, competition. Even in the office I was working in, there was competition between people in the office, and I couldn't stand it. So I started my own company writing artificial intelligence, and it turned out to be very successful, and I had a lot of toys and, you know, got engaged in a whole bunch of materialism. And I was like, this is not going to make me happy. Everybody was pretending it would make them happy, but I wasn't happy. I was miserable. I had everything I could ever want. And so I realized that I couldn't live life from the outside in. I need to go learn how to live life from the inside out. So I literally gave my business away, and I said, you know, I got to do something radical here to figure out how this thing called life really works. And I became a monk for 8 years. A lot of silence, a lot of meditation, 6 to 8 hours a day of silence and meditation, a lot of study. I studied primarily saints and heroes, people throughout history that seemed like they had that internal happiness, that internal confidence, that they knew who they were and nothing really shook them. And I studied their lives, and I started to notice this pattern, that every one of them had a virtue. Like Mother Teresa was compassion, and Martin Luther King was committed to brotherhood, and Abraham Lincoln was committed to unity, and Gandhi was committed to peaceful liberation, and Christ was committed to forgiveness, and Buddha was committed to compassion. And I was like, all these people, these figures, these, whether they be mythological or historical or religious, the heroes in our society and in our life all had one virtue that was defining who they would, and they stood for it. And their entire career, all the statues we made of them and everything we did was to honor them for expressing beautifully their virtue, for knowing who they were, knowing their heart virtue, and for leaving a legacy, for giving their gift. And I was like, wow, it's a very simple three-part formula for how to be the authentic human being that each person was born to be. So, you know, I created, you know, a way that people could know their heart virtue, and then I put programs together, and I came up with coaching tools, and I went out and got a lot of tools from masters in life coaching and in communication, in training, accelerated learning techniques. How do you get somebody to start standing from the inside out for what is most meaningful to them? And I found that by doing that, I was like, wow, fulfillment started showing up from the inside out as well.
Well, you know, there was a moment, you know, of clarity that I remember hearing you speak of when you were in the monastery for all of those hours meditating, and there was a truth that dropped down for you, and it really kind of goes in alignment with, you know, talking about the end of our lives or the end of the world or today, you know, being the end of anything or the beginning or the future or the possibility of something amazing, extraordinary, because you've been able to imagine it. When it's all right, said and done, what was the one revelation that comforted you when you took an aerial perspective about what's going on here on the planet?
Well, I had three real breakthroughs when I was in the monastery. The first was when I realized that we are not billions of people living in one world. We are one people living in billions of worlds. And each person's world is defined by what's most meaningful to them and deserves respect. So we are not billions of people living in one world. We are one people living in billions of worlds. The other perspective I got was one day after a very long meditation, I was almost like an out-of-body experience. And then when I sort of kind of came back into my body, for lack of a better word, you know, I'm not very metaphysical, I'm more practical, but the thing that really changed my perspective on life and reality was that I had this meditation, and when I came to from it, I opened my eyes, and what I realized was, oh my God, this is a dream. So to give you an example, have you ever like been in a nightmare, had a nightmare, and then all of a sudden you wake up from the nightmare and you say, oh my God, thank God, it was just a dream, because it seems
so
real?
Yeah.
Right. Well, what I got perfect clarity about is the day we die, we actually wake up and we say, oh my God, it was just a life. And right now, while we're having this conversation, this is the dream, and it seems so real. And we wonder if we're just going to die and go into the dirt, or whether we're going to ascend to heaven. And the fact is, you know, and I've experienced it, it's like there's a pure consciousness. Who you are is who you still are. And you realize, oh my God, I was dreaming in this physical form, and now I'm free of that, and now I'm awake. And I think the third thing, you know, is something Einstein said, and it's basically not all things that can be counted count, and not all things that count can be counted. It's kind of like, you know, when we take a look at the virtues that are most meaningful to us and communicate on that level, a lot clears up. But when we're focused on, you know, my stuff and who took it from me and, you know, can I keep as much as I can, and, you know, we're worried about keeping up with the Joneses, life gets distracted a lot. So
So when someone steals something from you or they're being undermining, what's the best thing to just relax into?
Well, start by getting clarity about what am I committed to that's being violated. Anytime you're frustrated, anytime you're angry or blaming or critical or judgmental, ask yourself, okay, what am I committed to? What am I wanting to be fulfilled? And above all, avoid the blame game. Avoid the culprit, the pointing of fingers. I know this is something you, Tamara, are a big, big fan of, is saying, listen, there's no culprit here. You're constantly saying, there's nobody to blame here. There's no person involved. It's just, I'm trying to get what I want. This person's trying to get what this one that they want. Another person's trying to get what they want. And they're going about it in a way that it looks like, you know, there's not enough to go around. But we know that's not true. We know that's not true. We know that we can create at will. You know, if we'd have looked, you know, 4,000 or 5,000 years ago, everybody would say, well, there's not enough room for everybody to live in a house. You know, some people have to live in huts or caves. And it's like, well, we've created out of nothing the resources that everybody can live in shelter. And if we could just figure out how to distribute it to the places where there aren't those resources, but we're getting there. So, you know, the thing to do is to get clarity about what you're committed to. If your spouse is frustrated and you're thinking, oh, she doesn't listen, maybe you're committed to being respected. If, you know, somebody, you know, sells you something and charges you twice, maybe you're committed to honesty or accuracy. And get really clear about that, because, and you know, take the online assessment. Find out what that common denominator is for all those things. Because we're convinced that, you know, we have habits and moods and desires that change what we're committed to. And the whole beauty of heart virtues that we discovered is that it actually does identify a core thing that no matter what your complaint is, no matter what your mood is, whether you're tired or whether you're a child or whether you're grown up, throughout your life there's this one virtue. And it's like almost like a fingerprint or spiritual DNA. And when you know what that one thing is that you're most committed to, you have that confidence. You can say, wow, now it makes sense why I was so angry with my brother. So now it makes sense why I'm having so many arguments with my wife lately. I'm committed to this, and it's not being fulfilled. And the second step, after you just get clarity about what it is, the second step is, how do you invite other people so that you get your virtue while they're getting their virtue fulfilled? It's a dance.
Now, you know, because I know I'm committed to authentic self-expression and innocence. And am I also in a position where, because I'm so committed to that, and I'm so frustrated when it's not present, is that why I'm just like absolutely incensed when innocence isn't being expressed or uplifted?
Well, it's one of two things. The first thing is, it could be that it's just being violated and you're angry because you're seeing it being violated. But more often than not, we're not frustrated because something out there is happening. Because conditions are by and large neutral. You know, there's right and wrong, good and bad. You know, people think, oh, if you took people off the planet, you know, there'd be no more killing. Well, that's not true. Animals are killing each other out in the middle of the forest where people have no influence at all. So just get that the way life works is that conditions are neutral until we judge it and blame about it. So step number one is to know what those things are. But more often than not, what I found is when somebody's angry with another person, they're really not angry with the other person. They're angry with themselves while they're around that person because they haven't figured out how to communicate to get what they want. So, for instance, if I'm committed to being respected and somebody cuts me off in traffic and I have Neanderthal habits of communication, I'll slip them a bird. But if I'm, you know, committed to being respected and somebody cuts me off in traffic, I might learn to breathe and say, wow, how uncomfortable. I am committed to being respected. And I might say, okay, this person violated my space. I'm committed to being respected. And who's somebody recently that that has fulfilled my commitment to respect? Wow, let me call them right now on the phone and talk to them. And when we do that and we basically say, okay, something in my world has given me an opportunity to express my virtue. If we don't express it well, we get angry at ourselves. So now we have the anger that our virtue is violated and the anger at ourselves for not knowing how to communicate it. And that's what I spend most of my time doing. You know, identifying someone's heart virtue only takes an hour or two. But then working with them over a period of weeks, months, so that they express that virtue beautifully. And so that may even take on a contribution that gets them great rewards. I'll give you an example. There was a woman that was committed to innocence and compassion. She was from Nicaragua. And she got clarity about that virtue in her life, and she started communicating, people, I'm committed to innocence and compassion. And somebody said, well, you know, you keep saying that, but what are you doing with that? So she sat down and she thought about it. If I was going to really be a profound expression of innocence and compassion, if my life was going to really be about that, what would I really want to take on? And she said, I want to see that every child in Nicaragua that is homeless has a hug at night and a roof over their head. And that was basically, she just came up with that. She said, every child in Nicaragua have a house, at a hug at night and a roof over their head. You know, and I met her at a hotel I was at. I was at a convention, and I was one of the speakers, and she came up afterward, and she said, I want to tell you something. That work that we did has changed my life. She had tears running down her cheeks. And she said, I'm committed to seeing that every child in Nicaragua has a hug at night and a roof over their head. She says, Greg, I got to tell you, it's happening. I've been talking to people. We've got a nonprofit formed. We've got the government involved, social workers. We've got and people, it's creating a movement. And she said, I never thought I could have that impact. Now, what she loves that has tears running down her cheeks is, above all, that she's getting to express her virtue. And that's all anybody wants. Mm-hmm. Whether it's just, even if you have a relatively, you know, common job, if you get to express your virtue at it, you're happy. If you, you know, you could be a world leader, but if you're not expressing your virtue, you're miserable.
Right. What does, is it common that the opposite of your heart virtue shows up to reveal your heart virtue?
Well, if you believe that the purpose of life is to invite people to become the best they can be, you know, that the reason, you know, if you look at what would happen on the planet if we removed gravity, right? If we no longer had the burden of gravity, you'd become a wimp. You'd be like a jellyfish. You wouldn't need bones or muscles to move around as much. So the fact that we have gravity, that we have resistance, makes us strong. You know, when people go to the gym, they pump weight. They're working against gravity, but it's making them strong. So I believe the purpose of everything in nature is, you know, it's to create a species that is expressing itself beautifully, brilliantly. You know, and it's funny,
wow.
On a side note.
And we best, yeah. Go ahead. We best know that in challenge.
In what?
In challenge.
Oh, yeah. Challenge is just an opportunity to make wrong, to express your heart virtue, to stand for what you believe in, to conquer and conquest. You know, we have a lot of different options when we're faced with challenges. You can complain, become a weenie or a victim. You can step up and be the hero. You can stand for yourself authentically. You know, so that's the whole purpose of challenge. And I believe there are forces in nature. I mean, it's crazy. When I was studying quantum physics in college, there's forces like entropy, which basically prove that as soon as the system starts to come together and get easy, when things get easy in any particular system, chaos comes in and attacks the system, and it's called entropy, is the measure of how disorder enters systems to make them want to evolve and get better. And primarily, it's the living organisms in an environment of chaos that have the proactive duty or responsibility or just opportunity to have impact.
Right. And you were about to say, because we're getting ready to close here, but you were about to say on a side note.
Well, on a side note, you know, these virtues show up and as beautiful expressions in nature all over the place. You know, the dog is known to be loyalty. The bird is known to be freedom. The owl is wisdom. You know, and you can go through the animal kingdom. The lion is leadership. And those animals express those qualities beautifully and simply. So, you know, heart virtues aren't just about people. The entire environment that we live in, patron saints of religions and the apostles and, you know, mythology, there are these mythological characters, and their name literally translates to a virtue. A lot of people's, most people's names translate. If you go look up your name, you're going to see that it represents a virtue. So these virtues are the very fabric that make life what it, what's meaningful, that make what's important and meaningful in life what it is its virtue.
Wow. And you know what? It'd be really good if every one of us knew what our heart virtue was, because, you know, being able to identify what it is that's been violated helps so much to create more environments where we feel those goosebumps, where we're, you know, just sailing, or it feels like we're soaring or flying. I know that when there's that freedom of expression and people are seen as innocents, and, you know, people are working together and families are together and couples are together and people aren't undermining or having affairs or, you know, things like that aren't going on, I'm in bliss. And, you know, I bet everybody's got a story like that, whether it's, you know, I'm in bliss when there's independence, I'm in bliss when there's teamwork, you know, whatever that is, to be able to identify it, would you say can help us to create more experiences that would be in alignment with what has our hearts for?
Yeah, it's, you know, it's beautiful when people know their heart virtue, and what we've found is most people get clarity and confidence through the process. Those are the two things that we find that people get more than anything, is clarity and confidence from knowing their heart virtue. So if that's what people are seeking, then it's a perfect opportunity.
Yeah, so if you're out there and you're listening and just it's piqued your curiosity, just go to www.heartvirtue.com. And you're listening to Max and Friends. We want to give a shout out to Max over in Europe. And Greg, I want to thank you so much for being on the show here with us tonight. I want to thank Ronan in the background there. And everybody, be safe out there and love yourselves and love each other. And Greg, in parting, do you have any closing words that you'd like to leave with our listening audience?
You know, I love seeing people stand for what they most believe in. So I encourage, you know, every one of you, if you have something that's unsaid that you need to say, find a way to communicate it powerfully and beautifully and make that courageous phone call, send that courageous email, and start the process of you know, getting unstuck and standing for your life.
That's beautiful. That's beautiful. And Ronan, what are we listening to? Thanks for tuning in to Max and Friends.